well, would you say that he was the kind of individual who encouraged polarized responses? In other words, you either thought he was tremendous or you were very antagonistic toward him?
I'm sure in his time that was certainly true, because throughout the 19th century, really public attitudes toward Indians and federal policies governing Indian programs, including education, had been quite different from the one that Collier introduced. And the idea that anybody could place any value on Indian traditional cultures and languages was really unthinkable. It was stupid from the point of view of his opponent.
Right.
And Collier, of course, then espoused a whole set of attitudes and viewpoints that were revolutionary. So being the center of a revolutionary movement, Collier had lots of enemies, and people either agreed with him that yes, there is something of value. It is doubtful that we have good reason to attack it and attempt to tear it apart and annihilate it. And there were, of course, people on the other side who followed the previous line and said, oh no, for the future benefit of the nation and the Indian culture and language must go. So you had these two conflicting points of view. And Collier was a very complex sort of personality, I'm sure. I think he was very sincere. And so far as I'm concerned, I think that the revolutionary course of the federal Indian policy and the Bureau of Indian Affairs after the advent of Collier was far more sound, far more rational than anything that had preceded it. And he brought together quite a wide variety of personalities, many of them highly competent people, at least I so consider them. Willard Beatty is one. He also brought together some clucks. But I guess in any organization, you have both kinds. It's impossible to always make sure that you have two. But
this is Homer Howard.
Yeah, he was quite confident. I don't recall what Homer Howard now was concerned with, except that he used to be concerned with the administration or operation of teacher training schools that they held every summer.
Right, that's where I ran into him.
And he did other things, but I can't recall what they were.
Mm-hmm. What about Samuel Thompson? Did you ever know him?
Daniel Thompson?
Samuel
Thompson?
Mm-hmm.
No.
He wrote very, very long letters, a lot of which I Xeroxed. Well, he was pretty much in charge of public school relations.
Oh, and no, in Washington, I presume.
Well, he traveled a lot.
He
traveled all over the country, and he'd write back, you know, these long.
Well, if I ever knew him, the name didn't even ring a bell.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But pretty much on the whole, you would say the people Collier gathered were sharp.
Yeah, they were sharp people. Many of them with anthropological training instead of religious training, which made them quite different. And anthropology was almost anathema among many segments of the population on and around the reservation.
Mm-hmm.
They somehow represented the antithesis of what the missionaries aspired to do.
Who was his man in charge of the anthropology program at that time? McKeel,
Scudder McKeel.
Did you know him?
I met him, yes, but I don't remember much about him. I remember John Province better, because I probably knew him for a longer period of time and knew him a little better.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have too much contact during that period with people from the Washington level, aside from Willard Beatty and on occasion John Collier. And, oh gosh, a man by the name of Daniels from the education office in Washington. Otherwise, I didn't have very much occasion to have any close contact with them. I was too small a cog in the operation to be concerned with that sort of thing.
Well, do you think that Beatty was wise in launching into the bilingual program, given all of the problems that you've described?
I think in theory he was, but in practice, as I said, I think it was before its time, because we didn't have the trained people who could function as teachers in a bilingual situation and make it work. And how do you make it work when you have no teachers? And it was totally unfeasible to attempt to make native speakers out of Anglo teachers to make it possible for them to use a bilingual approach to education. So, I feel now that probably it was before its time, at least as it might relate to school children. For adults, perhaps somewhat less, because it was possible to go and get classes of adults and at least teach some of them how to read and write Navajo, and they in turn then could read the newspaper to people that couldn't themselves read.
Well, would you say that he was oftentimes ahead of his time?
I wouldn't be a bit surprised, like many people, many thinkers in his category, yes. I think Beatty in many situations, many areas, was somewhat ahead of his time. I was just reading a little document on my desk talking about the open classroom and reciting its relationship to progressive education and pointing out that it was not new. And of course this really rang a bell, because Beatty was a proponent of progressive education in a period when progressive education was hardly accepted in the elite schools of the East, much less among teachers recruited to teach in reservation situations. So the net result was that progressive education in the hands of these completely untrained teachers was a little bit difficult to implement. They had, all their training had been in the type of classroom situation and conduct that attached to education in the 1920s.
Well, in this sense then, and this is one of my major themes, is his connection with progressive education, you would say that he was ahead of the nation as a whole.
Well, he was right out in the lead, yes.
I mean, dealing with progressive education through Indian education, mm-hmm. when actually, as you say, it wasn't accepted.
Well, it hadn't become characteristic of education throughout the country by any means at the time he was concerned with promoting it in Indian education. And of course, the only opportunities for training or retraining of teachers was in the course of the summer schools, as they called them, every year. And Beatty used to expound on the subject, and of course
on progressive education?
Yes, and on a great wide variety of subjects. He was quite a very excellent speaker and a very excellent thinker, and he was a man of enormous energy. He just ran all over the country. He was always on the move. And in summer schools, he was always lecturing, especially in the evening. They'd have evening sessions, and they were very well attended. So he was a person who had a great deal of information. He was a good thinker. He was an excellent speaker. In other words, he was really a leader, and he was a person who could convince and could captivate his audience. But for them, on the basis of this type of training, to overcome all of the practices and customs that they had acquired in the course of previous experience in school was somewhat difficult. So many of them really had no idea how to operate a classroom within the framework imposed by the policy or principles of progressive education. And I'm sure the same thing is true today with the open classroom. If I had more time, I'd go visit some of them. I'd just be real interested to see how they operate. I'd like to see test scores that indicate the level of learning and that sort of thing, because I'm really skeptical. I don't know. I'm not skeptical about the principle involved. Uh-huh. I'm skeptical about the ability of teachers to implement it.
Oh. Continuation of interview, part two. This is the 1st of February. Bob, we were talking last time about the bilingual books program, and I had read somewhere that there was also a bilingual film project. Did you get in on any of that, or do you know about it?
This is a long time ago, in, say, the early 1940s?
Same period.
I had no part in any bilingual films that were made, but I have a vague recollection of some films that were made in Navajo and English. No, in Navajo only. Probably by the Division of Health under Dr. Peters at Fort Defiance, possibly in the late 1930s. Later, in the early 1950s, some films were also made that I remember. One of them related to tuberculosis, and I think the earlier one related to trachoma. The one that was made on tuberculosis was made in conjunction with an effort that was being made by the Division of Health, of the then Bureau Health Service, and the Navajo Tribal Council's Health Committee, and it was related to the effort that was being made under the leadership of the Cornell University medical team and Anna Wanika to educate Navajo people to the need for going to sanatoria and to otherwise presenting themselves for treatment of active tuberculosis. Now, I'm sure that there were other films too, because I've seen them in the past, but I can't recite their names nor the subject matter. But I would suggest that you write to Haskell Institute in Lawrence, Kansas, and ask for a list of Navajo language films that they might have in their depository there.
Mm-hmm.
And you might also write to the Materials Center at the Intermountain Indian School in Brigham City, Utah, for the same list, on the premise that it might be there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fine. Okay.
That's all
good
I
enough.
Can give you
That's
on
fine.
That.
It was just a not a significant matter, but it's nice to trace it down. Going back to let's go back to the war years a little bit. I have been reading about the project that the Indian Bureau undertook with first the University of Chicago Interdepartmental Committee, and then with the Society for Applied Anthropology. I trust you're familiar with what I'm